Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. We'll get to the trash of the day in about 20 minutes or so. Also, Matt Verderam in about 30 minutes. Sports Illustrated writer, get us a national perspective on not just the Chiefs, but talk a little bit more about the Chargers, the rest of the NFL, and some of the surprises that we've seen now heading into week four already. And it kicks off tonight, right? We've got some Thursday night football, Cardinals and the Seahawks. But let's focus in on the Chiefs some more with former Chiefs wide receiver Danan Hughes. He joins us each and every Thursday. You hear him every single week during the Chiefs broadcast with Mitch Holthus and Josh Klingler. And it's brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. And brought to you by Flight. Flight by Yingling, the next generation of light beer. We were talking some college football, Dane, and how Indiana's quarterback is the Heisman favorite right now. I was looking. I didn't realize until about 30 seconds ago, your Hawkeyes have the Heisman favorite coming to town.
Yeah, we got our hands full. I've been surprised with my Hawkeye defense. And maybe I've been spoiled because the defense is really what's been leading the Hawkeyes for, the last decade, I think.
Yeah.
Offense has kind of sputtered here and there. And I was at the game last week on the field against Rutgers back in Jersey. And I was a little surprised at the first half, how we gave up 21 points, some big plays. Defense didn't look like I've become accustomed to seeing. So hopefully that was a wake-up call for the defense because they're going to have their hands full against Indiana. I was surprised last week. I think everyone knew Indiana was a good football team, a really good football team, but Brett Bielema, my former teammate and classmate, didn't have his Illinois guys ready, and Indiana looked really good. So my Hawkeyes going to have their hands full, but I'm still confident.
When you look at what we've got this weekend, I'm going to ask you about Xavier Worthy and some of these other guys specifically in a minute, Danan, but is the deep passing game back? For two straight years, we've been asking whether or not they can develop it again. Tyquan Thornton is the most targeted deep receiver in the NFL, and Patrick Mahomes has the second most EPA efficiency on deep throws this year. Do we think that it's here to stay?
I think so. I think Patrick addressed it, and I thought it was well spoken in regards to the confidence and the correlation between the confidence of protection and the willingness to take what's downfield. And I've always been a strong advocate, and maybe this is the part of me as a former wide receiver. I've said it during the broadcast. The main thing I always wanted at the college level, I didn't play wide receiver in high school, but at the college level and at the pro level, I wasn't a burner. I wasn't going to pull past anybody, but I always wanted the quarterbacks to have the confidence in the ball will either be incomplete, but it won't be intercepted. Like, just if you feel like throwing it up to me or if you want to give me a chance on 50-50 balls, just know that it's not going to be intercepted. And I feel like Patrick has garnered enough confidence with Tyquan Thornton especially that he's willing to give him a chance. I mean, to go to him back-to-back plays like he did against the Giants, if there's no other example of confidence, that's one. I mean, to do it in that fashion, in those circumstances, tells you about the confidence that he has in Tyquan. And I like that component of our offense. I mean, if we're not going to have big hitting plays in the run game, we got to figure out, and I've said this from the offseason, we had to figure out how to get chunk plays offensively. And if that's going to be by way of through the air, then I'm all for it.
Xavier Worthy obviously can change some things for them on Sunday. He was a full participant yesterday. I know we all thought maybe he was going to play last week, but now that he's a full participant, I think at this point people are even more confident that he's going to play his first game since week one. What does that do for this offense and the advantage maybe that exists only having three plays on film in 2025 of him?
I think it's huge. I think that you go into the OTAs through the preseason. When you come out healthy, you kind of knew that Rashee Rice and that whole situation was going to unfold similar to what it did. And when you come out of the preseason, you say, you know what? We got that guy healthy. We got that guy healthy. We got this guy healthy. And oh, by the way, we got this diamond in the rough in Tyquan Thornton. I feel like you probably generated game plans for the ability to stretch the field and to utilize Xavier Worthy. And the one thing I'll say about Xavier is what was most impressive about him last year as a rookie was how quickly he was able to absorb the offense. Think about what we were throwing his way in the first quarter of the season, the first game of the season, and what he was able to do with it. It wasn't about, hey, let's bring him along slowly. It was about, hey, you're smart enough to absorb everything. So we got you going in motion. We got you shovel passes, jet sweeps. We got you running the whirly world motion. We got everything and we're throwing at it, and it didn't look like it overwhelmed him. So to me, the encouraging part of it, not only did it not overwhelm him, but he was able to flourish. 9 touchdowns last year. Stretched the field. We saw it in what he was able to do in the Super Bowl against the Chargers early in the season as well. And I wanted to see what that sophomore campaign would look like. What were we going to get with Matt Nagy and Andy Reid having 4, 5, 6 months to generate opportunities to expose Xavier Worthy? And I think we got shortchanged up to this point, obviously, but I like the idea that now that he's healthy, we're going to get a glimpse of what they had in store for us back through June and July and August.
Danny, you've been around a lot of players, so I'm not saying that on paper things can't be fixed. We heard Jeff Schwartz talk about Juwan Taylor's penalty issues. Like, he can fix him. He can line up onside. At this point, Dane, and I start to think it is an unwillingness to fix it, not an ability to do so, if that makes sense. And Andy, I think, all but admitted they're willing to accept the penalties, knowing how good of a pass blocker he is. Do you think that Juwan will ever go about fixing some of the lineup issues, or is he just accepted that the risk is worth it for him, knowing that if they don't call it for him most of the time, he gets the advantage he feels like he might need?
I think it's a mixture, and I'm not trying to dodge the question. I think it's a mixture. Here's the one thing. You guys play cards. I heard you guys talking about ping pong, but you guys have played cards and sure, poker at different times in the past. The first hand, you don't show your tell. The second hand, you don't show your tell. Most good poker players, of what I've heard, are waiting 2, 3, 4 hours into playing poker to recognize tendencies. I feel like Juwan Taylor, like, if he's offsides on the first series, then to me, that's a lack of focus. But everybody goes back to their normal routine, their normal approach. When you start getting a little tired, when the game gets a little longer, when the drives get a little longer, that's when you go back to what's normal for you. And what's normal for him is trying to get that jump. I will contend that more times than not, when he jumps with the ball, and he is just quicker off the ball than everybody else is. So it looks more egregious because he's quicker off the ball. I'm not saying all the time, and I'm definitely not giving him any excuses. But there are times where he's moving with the ball when everybody else is not moving with the ball. Having said that, on the other side, I played with Neil Smith and Derek Thomas. Those guys would get double-digit sacks, and every once in a while they'd be drawn offsides. we take it. When the offense is sputtering and we're not scoring at the clip that we want, I think it's more glaring of an issue. But if we can get to a point where we're scoring in the mid-20s and back up above 30, I don't think anybody's really caring about the one or two penalties if he's protecting the front side of Patrick Mahomes. It's just when it's going bad or when it seems like it's a negative play that throws us out of field goal range or puts us in a predictable situation that it kind of opens up everybody's eyes. So if Andy Reid and Matt Nagy and the offensive staff is okay with it, I'm going to trust them. I just like for it to be cleaned up, but I also know that it's a tendency thing. It's one of those things where later in the game, as you get tired, you start to lose focus on specific things, and that's when it happens.
We're talking to Danan Hughes here on 96.5 The Fan. What about what you've seen from Baltimore? You know, they're putting up points. The offense has definitely not been a problem other than Derrick Henry's fumbles in crucial spots. Defensively, though, they've got some major problems there. What are you seeing from Baltimore where I feel like nationally people are talking like Baltimore's 1-2 and, oh, they'll be fine, they'll be good and all this, and people are way more negative towards Kansas City being a 1-2 team?
It's interesting because I cannot ever think – there's very few organizations in professional football that have an identity that has lasted decades, that lasts year after year, coach to the next coach, quarterback to the next quarterback, leadership to the next leadership. And Baltimore is one of those that when you say Pittsburgh, when you say Baltimore, you speak defense. That's what they've been able to sustain since they came into the league. And to look at their numbers and see them 32nd in the NFL in yards per game, 31st in points per game, 30th in rushing, 31st in passing, like, I feel like we're in the twilight zone, like, to some extent. And it's I'm sure it's definitely something that they are having a tough time digesting in Baltimore. That's just not the Ravens' way. I'm assuming they're going to try to correct it, and they're going to look to this opportunity to change things around defensively. But offensively, I mean, Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson. They have some weapons. You can expect Derrick Henry to try to come out and prove that three fumbles in the last three games and costing them two games because of it is not who he wants to be or who he wants to be remembered as in a Ravens uniform. So we're going to have our hands full against their offense, but the defense with their injuries, there's some opportunity for us there. And we cannot allow this game to be close and in a close game, low scoring, and that plays into their hands. And so we got to open up the gates a little bit, get them in predictable situations, keep Derrick Henry on the sideline so that they're throwing the ball more and spy Lamar Jackson, and we'll come out with a win. But take advantage of a wounded defense has to be at the forefront of our minds this week.
I thought it was interesting you said there towards the end, Dane. And so do you think, maybe I misheard, you think a lower scoring game favors Baltimore more than Kansas City?
I think so, because okay. I think if we're not scoring offensively, we're playing into the confidence build that their defense needs.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So they've given up, you're talking about yards per play, 5.76 yards per play. They've given up 32 points a game. So if they come in here and we're in the fourth quarter and it's 17-14, like, There's a confidence build in that they can say, you know what, we're finally doing our part. Look at our defense and what we've done in the first 3 weeks. Well, we can look back at specific games. The Giants game was relatively close until the fourth quarter. To some extent, the defense on the sideline could be like, hey, guys, we're doing our part. We gave up 9 points. And there could be a confidence boost in that. And now you're looking at the other side. Now do your part. So I don't want the Ravens to have any of that come Sunday afternoon. I want them to be still questioning the identity of their organization when they leave town about 7:30.
I know that they wanted Christian Fulton to be in the mix in order to allow Trent McDuffie to move around. It feels like anytime Jalen Watson is healthy, I'm reminded, oh, cool, they're fine at corner just as long as he's available. It's when he's not available that they're trying Williams or trying Nazi Johnson and like moving things around that make it look like a problem. It seems as simple as when Jalen Watson is healthy, they can stop anybody.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he's definitely a solid number two corner. He's very physical. He understands the scheme that Spags is trying to play. I like his presence in the blitz game between he and Trent McDuffie. You go back to that Eagles game, and I think I mentioned it last week. When you talk about putting your foot on the gas pedal from the beginning, we had every defensive back blitz in the first series of that game, except for Brian Cook, who was playing center field as a free safety. That tells you about the confidence, but it also tells you about the versatility of guys like Jalen Watson. Now, Christian Fulton is a huge asset because, one, we didn't know what we would have in Noah Williams. We didn't know what a rookie would bring to the table, being isolated man-to-man on an island opposite Trent McDuffie. And he stepped up and he's played well, but he's still a rookie. What Jalen Watson being healthy does, as well as Christian Fulton, if he's able to get back on the field, it allows Trent McDuffie to move inside. And he is one of the more dangerous slot corners slash blitzers in the NFL. But if either of those guys are hurt, now you're relegated to have Trent playing more outside, which takes away that aspect of our defense. Yeah, having Jalen Williams be healthy is great. Having Noah Williams, Jalen Watson being healthy is great. Having Noah Williams be a guy that can be depended on and grow as a rookie. And then if you're able to get Christian Fulton back in the mix, like that makes our complete defensive backfield very, very formidable, one of the tops in the league.
Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. Of course, you'll hear him on the broadcast this Sunday afternoon as the Chiefs take on the Ravens. Appreciate it, man, and we'll be keeping an eye on your Hawkeyes as well.
Please do. Maybe throw up some prayers, bro. We might need it.
Yeah, sounds like it. There you go. That's Danan Hughes as the Hawkeyes do take on Indiana and the Heisman favorite. But, of course, Danan on the broadcast right here on 96.5 The Fan Sunday afternoon.
It feels like a long time since I was comfortable saying, hope they're in a high-scoring game against each other, because that has not been the case for the Chiefs for some time. I kind of get it in the sense that those are the games the Ravens are losing. The ones in which points are being scored are inevitably the ones in which the Ravens are going down. I guess some of this is the Chiefs' career record against Lamar Jackson, 5-1. Their consistency in beating them in huge games, sometimes close huge games, all that stuff. I guess I wouldn't mind if it was low-scoring. It's the way they've won the one game they've won so far this year, and a way they won a huge amount of games last year. And until the offense is like all the way up and running, I'm not sure I want to get in a 30-27 game with Baltimore. That feels like a dangerous game for the offense.
That's what I was thinking as well. I get what Danan's saying in terms of all of a sudden the Ravens defense is feeling themselves again. And it's the fourth quarter and they've only given up 14. And they're like, oh, we got this figured out. And does that give them confidence? I get what he's saying. I would be still surprised, I guess, if the Chiefs offense though is capable of getting into the 30s. That's also probably part of my thought process, is like I don't think the Chiefs can get to the 30s right now with their offense, unless you tell me that special teams has a return and sets up a really short field, or obviously they force two turnovers against Russell Wilson. If they force another Derrick Henry fumble for a fourth straight game and it sets up a short field, something like that. We'll talk more about Derrick Henry tomorrow. But our conversations with Danan Hughes are brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue, and brought to you by Flight. Flight by Yingling, the next generation of light beer.
Trash of the day.
Had a couple different ones we could go with. Thought about this story of someone that was paying money to try to get taller, and shockingly, it didn't work.
It didn't? What about those people who were having, remember they were having like fake bones put in just to be like permanently
this
taller?
This was growth therapy. They paid like $2,300 and then after 6 months, it went right back to the original.
Dang.
And the doctor said, well, yeah, people aren't noodles. It doesn't work that way. So we could do that, or how about this?
People aren't noodles.
Yeah, true.
Good quote.
How about the friendliest cities in America, according to a new survey?
Oh, is Kansas City one of them?
They are not. We are not. Okay. Philadelphia, shockingly, I know, not on the list. Neither
Baltimore?
Was Baltimore. I am stunned that Boston made the list, though.
Boston's on the list?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, here we go. This comes from Yuzu, a social app. I've never heard of this. Okay. Y-U-Z-U, anybody? They were asked to rate how pleasant the people in their own cities are. Number one, I think they're just all in a good mood because the weather's perfect. Number one, San Diego, California. But you know what? Everybody's in a good
Wi-Fi.
75 degrees every day. It's sunny. Feeling good.
Yeah.
Number two, I've never been to this place, but Raleigh, North Carolina.
Ooh, okay.
Right?
Raleigh, huh?
Phoenix. Number
Honestly,
three.
Honestly, I don't think anyone cares to be angry there.
We're all retired. It's all a bunch of retired people.
I spent a lot of time in Phoenix. I don't remember anyone being particularly angry
people
in
were
that
nice.
City.
Now, I'd be angry after 35 days in a row of 110 degrees, I think. I think I'd be a little upset then. Miami, number four. Okay. Houston, number five.
A lot of warm weather. Your experience of Houston did not go that
way. I have to disagree with Houston being number five. Now, look, I met some very nice people. I still have some friends that I made while I was in Houston. But, yeah, I mean, look, this isn't a survey about crime. It's just about friendly crime. Getting robbed at gunpoint didn't make it a very friendly city to me. But that's not,
that doesn't,
you know, every city has crime, okay?
If you made me start guessing the friendliest cities in the United States, Houston wouldn't have been anywhere.
No.
I would have ignored them, Boston, New York. A lot of major cities have been off the list. And then the bigger cities in, like, the less populous states, they're, like, only nice to the people who are in their own city.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why Boston's on the list.
Okay.
They're nice to other Bostonians.
Mm-hmm.
You're a visitor. Get the hell out.
Number six, urban Honolulu, Hawaii.
Okay, again.
Number seven was Boston. Yeah, give me a break. Number eight, San Jose, California.
A lot of warm weather.
Number nine, well, it changes. Number nine, Minneapolis.
I actually find
cities.
Minneapolis to be incredibly friendly as a city.
I've been there one time, and I enjoyed my time there.
Minnesota.
And then number
very nice people.
Number 10, Denver, Colorado. And I would tend to agree. I actually have had very good experiences in Denver. I'm a big fan of that city, actually, other than the football team.
Beyond.
Maybe that's calming everybody down. Everybody's laid back.
Somebody,
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
we
mean,
say that and it's legal. It's legal
everywhere now.
Just about now.
I think it's just like a laissez-faire attitude that comes with some of the places like that. Nobody's worried about being on time, and we're just like, oh, it's
That's
fine.
The thing I will say.
It's the go with the flow attitude, something I'm terrible at and very much do not enjoy.
Yes.
About a personality of other people. I know we should have a plan and to be arriving at a particular time.
So,
it should not be just doing things flippantly without an order.
I do like Denver, but you're right about the laissez-faire attitude. That, you know, when you go there, you go, they're on mountain time, literally on mountain time, and it is.
If they're an hour late,
but I've been staying at the restaurants.
Service, yeah,
restaurants
really
just taking forever. It's just, it's like it's the same at lake. Like you go to the lake, it's the same thing. It just the mentality is a little bit different.
Every time I've eaten in multiple of the cities you mentioned in California. It's like, you're like, hey,
San Jose.
I'll take the check. I mean, I've been here for like forever.
It was that way in Santa Clara too.
Yeah, you don't want me to leave? Like, I'm ready to leave. I'm surprised that you're not ready to do that. I think that might be part of it. Is that because as a collective unit, they're asking the people in your own city. Like, as an outsider, it'd probably be like, why are we doing this? Why are we acting in this?
So there you go. The 10 friendliest cities in the United States. I did not see a full list. I don't know where Kansas or Missouri.
I think Kansas City would be a very friendly city.
I think so. Midwest, nice, you know? We got that going for us.
Yeah.
That's the trash of the day. Up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour, Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated is going to be on the show. We'll ask him about some of the biggest surprises 3 weeks in, now heading into week four of the NFL season, and of course, a little more in-depth on the Chiefs-Ravens matchup. That's coming up right here on Code.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Chiefs Red Half Hour brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net.
Well, it is the Chiefs Red Half Hour here on Cody and Gold, and we are joined by Matt Verderam over at Sports Illustrated, NFL staff writer, of course, the Matt Verderam Show over on Patreon. Matt, it's always good to have you on the show. I wanted to just start broadly about the NFL as a whole before we dive deeper into the Chiefs specifically. 3 weeks into this thing now, we have obviously seen some surprise 3-0 teams. What's the biggest takeaway, I guess, you have now heading into week four?
You know, I think it's that of all the teams in the league, I'm not sure that any of them feel overwhelming. You know, normally you look at the 3 weeks of the season, okay, this team's playing great football. That team's playing great football. They're the early team to beat, which, you know, what does that mean? Who knows? It depends on your definition. But look around. Who's the team that you're like, that team just looks like the odds-on favorite? I mean, Buffalo is a miracle against Baltimore away from being 2-1 at best. They could have lost the game to Miami at home. I mean, they were, yeah, if Zach Taylor doesn't take a roughing the punter penalty, he might have lost that game. Baltimore's 1-2. The Chiefs are 1-2. The Packers would have been the team I would have kind of pointed to. They lost to the Browns. Detroit is probably the closest to that, but, you know, they're 2-1. You know, Philadelphia's 3-0, but they've not looked dominant in any game they've played. There's just early on, there's no team that I look at and say that team is just playing great football 3 weeks in a row.
Last year, because the Chiefs won 15 games, I don't think at any point this shifted. Because of the way the Super Bowl ended, because of the way they've looked human at the beginning, do you think the rest of the teams in the league right now aren't taking Kansas City as serious as they were before?
Oh, no, God, no. I still think, I mean, they're who they are until proven otherwise for an extended period of time. I mean, look, I think teams might feel like they're a little more vulnerable maybe than they've been in recent years. But, you know, look, the Chiefs, everything's going to be determined with them in January. I mean, that's just, I think we'd all be shocked if they're not in the playoffs, barring some kind of cataclysmic injuries. And, yeah, if they're a 7 seed, right, like the worst case scenario for playoffs, and they're a 7 seed, they're a 2 seed, they're going to Baltimore. Is Baltimore going to take them lightly in that game?
No.
Like, no, nobody. Like, let's be honest. If you were a Bills fan in that scenario, you're like, oh my God, please beat them, please, like knock them out of, you know. So no, I think teams feel like they're mortal. I also would say though, I think part of it is this. You know, I think if you're a Baltimore or Jacksonville or Detroit here the next 3 weeks, you're like, hey, we're getting them when we want to get them. They don't have rights. They're kind of, you know, they're struggling through a little bit. I'll be very curious to see when the Chiefs, if they can ever get the full strength, what they actually look like.
You had mentioned, like, something I think that is very true about this team. And because you watch even more of the rest of the league than most people, the Chiefs offense doesn't look good. But for the majority, we tried to say this, but I'm curious if you feel the same. It's not like it's one of the worst offenses in football. It feels that way comparatively because we're used to the Chiefs looking a certain way. This is what an average NFL offense looks like, right?
Yes. I mean, right now, and forgive me, I don't have it right in front of me, I think they're dead center in the league in yards per play. They're tied with Denver. They're either 16th or 17th. Like, they're right there. And then if you're a big believer in the analytics of it all, EPA, they're 7th.
Yep.
Like, you look at them and go, how is that even possible? And I believe they're past EPA, they're 4th. It's either their EPA or their success rate pass the ball, but they're top 10 in like every metric on offense in terms of you know, the analytics. Now if you just go by standard stuff, they're more middle of the league. But again, look, I think the one big question that is obvious but that is unanswered: what does this team look like when Worthy comes back? We may find out this weekend. What does this team look like if they have Worthy and Rice together? I understand there are a lot of people out there who say, well, you know, that's not just going to fix everything. Look, it's not going to fix the run game, but it is going to fix a lot of things. I mean, if the Bengals didn't have Chase and Higgins on the field, yeah, I mean, they're going to look a lot different. You know, if the Chargers don't have McConkie and you know, pick a guy, Keenan Allen on the field, yeah, they're going to look a lot different. So I think there is a little bit of, and I know just from talking to people around the team, survive. Just survive these 6 games. Get to 3-3. And if you do that, you know, all of a sudden you get a lot healthier and you'll get the back half of the schedule, back 2/3 of the schedule. Other than playing at Buffalo, there's no game you look at and go, that's a really hard game. I mean, what is the second hardest game out of their last 11 games? What is it? At Denver? Maybe the Chargers at home? Like, they're going to be favored in almost every game they play the last 2 thirds of the year if they're healthy. So I think there's help on the way, and the defense is at least starting to look like a real defense.
We're talking to Matt Verderam here on 96.5 The Fan. You brought up the run game. A, do you think it does improve? And B, can it improve with what they have in-house, whether it's playing Breshard Smith more, whether it's just Isaiah Pacheco figures it out, or do you think there is a real chance they actually pull off a trade at some point this year?
Well, I think Breshard Smith's kind of the wild card that we don't really know about. I would love to see them play him a bit more. Obviously, he's a former receiver in college. He can throw him out of the backfield. He's got hands. He's got 4.4 speed. I'd like to see them utilize him and just give him a shot and see what you have. If he's not the answer, I don't think the answer's in-house. Hunt's fine in short yardage. Pacheco, it just feels like Pacheco has never really recovered from that leg injury. Maybe that's oversimplifying it. I know he had 4.5 yards to carry against the Giants, but let's also be honest. I'm not trying to pick on Isaiah Pacheco. He also authored one of the worst reps I've ever seen from an NFL player in my life. I mean, that was unconscionable. Like, I still don't know what he was doing. So, you know, if you're the Chiefs, look, you're not going to invest heavily in trading for a running back. No one's saying that they should be calling up and giving up a first-round pick. There's nobody out there they'd do that for anyway. But would you give up a fifth for Kamara? Maybe even it's a sixth? I think if you're the Chiefs, like, you've got to make that phone call, right? Like, I think that's worth the phone call. Would you give up something similar for a Breece Hall? You know, Achan, I would think he's going to cost a little more in Miami because there's more team control. But if you can get Alvin Kamara for, like, a sixth-round pick, I think if you're the Chiefs, you've got to really think about it. Because unless Smith is terrific, I just don't think they have the horses in the building to make it go.
Let's look at a few things this weekend, and then we can take a look at the rest of the NFL. For the Chiefs, do they, without Xavier Worthy or with Xavier Worthy, can anybody take advantage of the Ravens' defense? Where have you seen their deficiencies? Do you need Worthy in order to take advantage of it? Where do you attack the Ravens' defense, other than seemingly everywhere at the moment?
Well, I mean, look, the Ravens are one of these weird teams, and you see this every year in the NFL. There's always two or three teams like this. You look at their personnel and you think, like, oh, they're going to be great. And then you watch the games, oh, my God. Like, what is happening? I mean, the only game they played well defensively is against Cleveland, and I'm pretty sure the three of us and eight guys off the street could hold Cleveland at 12 points. So, I mean, I think Worthy being in this game is huge, because if you have Worthy, then you have Brown and Thornton, and all of a sudden you have a lot of speed on the field. You can stretch them in ways that will open up the underneath, will open up some of the run game. And I think that's something in this game that's got to happen. Like, I was sitting here watching the film right before you guys called the Chiefs-Giants, and you know the Chiefs were blowing the Giants off the ball at times in that game. Like, now the Chiefs running backs are not Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. They're not going to take advantage of it the way Detroit did. The Chiefs don't have to run that effectively, and they're not going to run that effectively, but you have to be able in this game to try to move them off a little bit, because if you can do it, look, Matt Abike may not play in this game. Van Noy's probably not going to play in this game. That is not the same front the Chiefs are used to seeing in Baltimore. It is a watered-down front, and if you can run the ball some and just not let them tee off in the pass game, I think there's going to be open spaces. You can throw against Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore has given up a million yards in the early part of the season. In fact, they've given up more yards than anybody else in football, and that includes the game against Cleveland. So I do think the Chiefs can move the ball, but I think it starts with having a respectable running game. It doesn't have to be overwhelming, but it's got to be respectable.
How do you think that they'll do it? More under center? More, you know, like, you know, because we've seen them maneuver themselves a little bit, I guess, Matt, over the last couple of quarters.
Yeah, I think they do need to continue to go more under center. They had success with that against the Giants. I like to see them do that. I thought that the most they did it was the first drive of the second half against the Giants. That was the best drive they had in the whole game.
Yep.
I also think if Worthy plays, not that you're trying to get extra hits on him, but maybe you'll see a little bit of some jet sweeps and some looks like that. Maybe Breshard Smith is a guy you want to play like that with in the game. Even a Hollywood. Hollywood's going against his former team. I'm sure he'd love to be involved in this game plan. You need to find a way to get Baltimore off balance, and you need to find a way to just back that front off a little bit, because, you know, that's been the problem early for the Chiefs. It's just, when you don't run the ball at all, these other teams can just look at you and go, well, we're just going to pin our ears back. I mean, what reason is there not to? You know, I mean, it's just, you've got to force that to change. And I do think if you're the Chiefs in this game, yeah, get under center a little bit. Run to the outside a little bit. Try to get to the edge. You know, take Roquan Smith out of that run game a little bit by getting away from him. If they can do that, again, they're not going to rush for 6 yards a carry. But if you can even run for four and a half, it drastically changes the way Baltimore can play against you defensively.
We're talking to Matt Verderam, NFL staff writer over at Sports Illustrated. In the AFC West, you brought up the Chargers a couple minutes ago, just about maybe tough games on the backside of the schedule for Kansas City. What do you make of the AFC West now? Because everybody in the offseason talked up how much better it's going to be. The Chargers certainly have three wins in their pocket already, three divisional wins. What do you make of the entire division at this point?
I think as long as the Chiefs get healthy, I think this division is going to come down to them and the Chargers. I just look, and I was somebody who in the offseason really believed that Denver was going to be better. I thought Denver would win about 11 games. I've watched Denver through three games. I don't know how you feel. They look like the exact same team from a year ago. I mean, it's Nix has been awful. Outside of the first half in Indianapolis, he's been terrible. Sutton is the only guy in that team that can catch a pass. He can't do anything else. Everybody talked about Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram has four catches in three games. Like, I don't know what you're doing with that offense. It's Sutton, and it's J.K. Dobbins, and that's it. And, like, you know, you look at them and just go, they're going to have to win every game 13-12. And that just doesn't work in the NFL. You're not going to do that. I think they're about a 500 team. The Raiders, to me, are what I thought they'd be. I think the Raiders are like a 6-7-1 team. They just – look, Geno's been fine. The defense isn't good. Genty's been a disappointment so far. I'm not, and I've never been a fan of Chip Kelly. I just don't like the way they call the game. The Chargers, to their credit, look, they're very good defensively. Offensively, you know, they played well against the Chiefs. They really haven't been good in the other two games. But their schedule is easy. Like, the Chiefs are probably going to have to win that game in December, and they're probably going to have to win their, you know, 12 games, which is not going to be easy. But again, you know, look at the schedule after they finish up against Detroit in week six. I mean, it's not overwhelming. It is not a schedule that you're like, wow, the Chiefs are going to struggle. So I do think it's going to come down to the Chiefs and the Chargers, but I do think the Chargers pose a real threat this year, where I feel like most years they pose an offseason, a preseason threat, and then the Chargers are not even worth talking about after like week eight.
You give Jackson Dart any chance to upset him this weekend?
Yeah, only because the Giants have a great defensive line and the Chargers do not have a good offensive line. And Dart, you know, whenever you have a guy coming in like that, there's no film. You don't know how they're going to play. You know, it was actually funny to say, like, against the Chiefs, in that game, when Dart got a couple plays down the red zone, I actually thought to myself, if he scores a touchdown here, they might not ever play Russell Wilson again. Like, this might be it. And they ended up taking, you know, him off the field, and we saw what happened. We saw the most uninspiring four plays in a goal line situation I've ever seen in your life. But, no, I think the Chargers win. But the one thing that scares you for the Chargers in this game is you really don't know what you're getting.
When you look at the, I guess now, the rest of the slate and the rest of what we're going to expect out of this, the AFC as a whole, let's just say the Chargers are a part of this conversation. Other than the Bills and the Chargers, are there any other teams you think to take, obviously the Ravens for now, that you take seriously in the AFC? Do you take the Colts serious, any of these squads?
No, I don't. I mean, look, I respect the Colts from the standpoint. Steichen, I think, is a good offensive mind, and Adam Rumo is an excellent defensive coordinator. So I respect them from that standpoint, but if you're asking me, do I think the Chiefs would be scared of them in a playoff game? No, I don't. I think right now, just sitting here looking at the AFC, I mean, if you said to me, who's in the divisional round, and I know one of these teams is about to be 1-3, I don't care. It's going to be Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, and the Chargers. And, like, here's the weird thing about this. Let's say the Chargers are a super high seed. Especially if the Chiefs or the Bills play them on the road, it's going to be like a home game for those teams.
True, yeah.
Like, you don't even care, right? Like, in some ways, if you're the Chiefs, you're like, oh, yeah, we've got to go to SoFi, big deal. It's going to be 80% Chiefs fans. You know, and it's like, and it's a fast track. So I don't know. I think those are the four best teams, even though two of them are 1-2 right now. Maybe it's one of these weird years where, you know, the Ravens and the Chiefs are 10-7 to 11-6, and they kind of muddle through. But you know how this goes. Who's healthy? Who's hot? You know, and it's a long season. If you're the Chiefs and the Ravens, you just don't want to get buried right now, and that's why this game is important. However, as bad as the Chiefs have played, if they beat Baltimore, everybody's going to have a game going, hey, 2-2. Feel pretty good about where they are. Feel great about where they are. I mean, and that's the nature of this thing. It can flip on a dime.
No question about it. Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated. Appreciate it as always, man. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Hey, you guys got it. Anytime.
Absolutely. Good to have Matt on the show. And it's true, though. It's this is what's fun about the NFL. Literally one win on Sunday. It's a big one for either team. We know that. But all of a sudden, yeah, you are. If you're Baltimore, you're saying you're 2-2. If you're Kansas City, you're 2-2.
With a massive win against a difficult opponent.
And you say, okay, well, they were able to survive and not just survive, but get a win in that circumstance where you're not at full strength, when you know your offense is still a work in progress. This is another one of the games where it doesn't matter how you have to win. You know, we were talking with Dane and Hughes before even Matt came on, right, about the style of game and low scoring versus high scoring. It's another one of those, like, truly, just find a way to win. You'll worry about eventually what the offense needs to look like by the time you get to the postseason or later on the year when you have Rice and everybody. Right now, can you, I don't want to even say steal one because the Ravens have the same record, but can you go ahead and find a way to get a win anyway against Baltimore, feel good heading in the Jags game, and then see where you're at? I still think that's true, you know, what Matt was saying about the right now, if you were still predicting the final four teams in the AFC, who's not going to still have Baltimore and Kansas City as along with Buffalo? And then, yeah, maybe it's the Chargers. Maybe there's another surprise team.
I guess last year taught me a lot about the win ugly, win big. Like, I know this team is at least good enough to go to a Super Bowl gold if they win ugly for 17 games. So I don't care. I don't care, like, anymore. You don't have to prove to me that you can win pretty against anybody. Winning ugly against the Ravens is fine with me. I don't care if it's 6-3 or 42-39. I'm not saying there aren't exposure points in which you can run into problems as a team, but they've shown enough over the last couple of years that they know what they're doing and they know what they're capable of in those moments, that they're going to get plenty of wins outside of that. So yeah, I don't send myself into a panic, I guess, regularly on that, but I don't know, man. They're in an interesting spot because we know what their problems are. Everybody knows what their problems are. They're not even like where their thing's going wrong. And we all are just waiting for another month until Rashee Rice comes back, until we know, because like it is really like it's 3-4 weeks still. We're ways away before he plays a football game. And so it's gonna take some time before we're actually watching Rashee Rice. And then how long does it take the offense to come together? As we previously mentioned, probably another 3 or 4 weeks, Gold. And so, I'm not going to get too caught up in it. I do think getting Worthy back is huge.
That's massive, just because if you're an opponent, what would we say the first 3 weeks? If you're an opponent, who are you really worried about offensively other than Patrick Mahomes? Now you add Worthy in the mix. Everybody knows on tape now, Tyquan Thorne's a legitimate deep threat in the NFL and for this football team. And so you start to have to worry a little bit more. Does that open things up for other guys? Is it all, like, as much as we're talking about having Worthy back most likely on Sunday and then Thorne's emergence, it wouldn't surprise me on Sunday if actually it's a game in which Hollywood Brown has one of his better games, just because so much of the focus might have to be on those others.
Now, I will say he's been disappointing in the explosiveness part.
Yes.
He looks like Juju, but 3 years younger. He does like the explosive. Like, when I thought of Hollywood Brown at his peak, Gold, he was like an explosive deep down the field threat. And when you've been talking about deep down the, and I'm not saying you're alone, hey man, when they get Worthy backed up, Tyquan and Worthy, I'm like, when they signed Hollywood, we were talking about him like a deep threat, right? I'm not saying that hasn't changed, but that was definitely part of the conversation at some point, right?
Yeah, the explosiveness hasn't been there. It's become more possession-y for Hollywood Brown.
Which they need right now, too. They can't just be thrown to Tyquan 25 yards down the field every time, which is what his current yards per attempt, I believe, is when he throws to Tyquan. Yeah. I'm not saying they don't need a possession guy.
Sure.
Fine. But, like, what is your role once Rice comes back? Because Rice is definitely that.
Yeah, you're trying to figure yourself out, you know, and there's been times under Andy Reid teams, of course, where they got off to slow starts. We're excited tomorrow on the show. We're going to have former Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith join us. We haven't had him on the show before. I don't think he's really done many interviews in Kansas City post-playing career either.
I don't think so.
And it'll be good to get his perspective, because in 2015, his team started 1-5. He was the quarterback. Andy Reid obviously was the head coach. And if you're wondering, they ended up winning 11 straight games down the stretch, including a postseason
win. Lose until they lost to the Patriots in the divisional round.
Yeah. So, and that
I think went on to go win the Super Bowl, or at least go to the Super Bowl, probably knowing the Patriots.
Yeah, so it'll be great to talk with him about how they're handling things and how close are they, and, you know, how they got to get through these next couple weeks and talk bigger picture stuff as well. So we'll have Alex Smith on the show tomorrow on a Red Friday.
Yeah, very, very excited. Honestly, Alex is one of the people I've enjoyed covering the most when I've had to, like, cover teams or athletes. That's normally one of the first questions people ask you. Who do you like talking to? I'm like, is it nice for me to tell you the people I didn't enjoy covering? Doesn't feel like that's nice for anybody involved. But I can tell you the people who are agreeable and you can get along with and also understand their place and where they were. Like, Alex has always had a very firm grip on his playing career. And I'll be interested to talk to him about young quarterbacks, too. Because
Jackson Dart and the Giants situation, how they're handling their young quarterbacks.
I hate the way teams have been handling young quarterbacks for years. I can't imagine Alex thinks it's any better, knowing the fact that he was put in a disadvantageous position and then had to... He was the original, in my opinion, Sam Darnold. A guy who had to completely reinvent his career that was... He was the number one overall pick and a massive disappointment, and nobody thought he was going to make it in the league anymore. And then he had to come to Kansas City, start for Andy Reid, and prove that he was a viable NFL guy. Mm-hmm. And that everybody just been... He'd just been stuck in changing coaches, changing positions, changing organizations. It was just kind of a mess. So really excited. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to a busy Red Friday in Kansas City. Someone, just because we were talking about Hollywood Brown, this is interesting. Someone just texted this in. They said the last touchdown Hollywood Brown scored was week 8 of the 2020. Is that right? That can't be right.
Did he score? I don't know why he would have scored a touchdown for the Chiefs last year.
He was hurt last year. Is it really since 2023? I mean, I guess it's not impossible. I would have to go and double check.
I got to be honest, man.
Really the last time he scored a touchdown in the NFL?
It very well might be.
Well, look, just go look at his Pro Football Reference. Last year, did he score a touchdown? He obviously missed a ton of games. He obviously doesn't have one yet this year. So he has not scored a touchdown since 2023. That is a fact.
Look, but here's the thing.
Crazy.
Once Worthy and Hollywood are from the back, I don't need Hollywood to do everything.
19 games, Cody.
What Hollywood's been doing for this team is perfect once everyone's back. As a fourth wide receiver, what you've seen out of Hollywood Brown, perfect. No notes. I'll take it. Yeah. Their problem is that they're relying on him to be a much bigger part of it. Right.
In his last 19 games, he has 4 touchdowns. And that's not having any this year or last year. But he only played 3 this year. He played 2 last year, and then he played 14 his final year in Arizona.
Some of the stats about the wide receivers, I got to be honest, they depress me. I saw someone after Tyquan caught that touchdown and said, Tyquan now has as many career receiving touchdowns as Sky Moore. I'm like, I don't need to hear that. That's not helping anybody. I'm not surprised by that development, but also gross. And that's not great.
It should make you feel encouraged, though, he's on the team currently.
He's being encouraged that he's already having the success, meaning talent-wise, this guy clearly has it. Just need his opportunity, and he's taking advantage of it.
Can somebody get the Men in Black thing and just erase that Sky Moore was a wide receiver so I don't have to think about it? It doesn't have to eat up any brain space for the rest of my life.
You say that, and I still get people that won't stop talking about George Pickens and Mecole Hardman and DK Metcalf, and Mecole Hardman and picks like that. So, no, people won't give it up.
Ever. I mean, I'd still like those wide receivers on the Chiefs, but I'm not bringing it up anymore. And at the very least, we don't have to bring it up as it relates to Sky Moore. If you just want to say, I wish Pickens was on this team, fine. It doesn't have to relate to the guy they didn't take instead now. I'm over it.
All right, up next, let's get to what's trending and a little bit of the evolution of Patrick Mahomes that we've seen in the first 3 weeks of the season. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.